Welcome to another episode of the Art Salon Podcast. I'm your host, Nico Bejarano. Before we get going, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share our talks with your friends and follow us on Instagram at the Art Salon to keep up with our upcoming guests and other announcements. And finally, if you enjoy the show, please leave us a 5-star rating on your preferred podcast platform. It helps direct others to the show and makes us feel good about what we're doing here. Today's guest is Otto Sauter, the famous piccolo trumpet and Baroque music expert. I will read a short bio of Otto for those of you that are not familiar with his work. And this is from the ITG, which is the International Trumpet Guild. Otto Sauter is well known as one of the world's leading trumpet soloists. As a specialist on the piccolo trumpet, the German musician has already appeared in all major concert halls. Otto Sauter's musical talent was encouraged at an early age. Born on the shores of Lake Constance, he was given his first trumpet lessons when he was only 4 years old. At the age of 16, he continued his musical training with Claude Ripas at the Winterthur Conservatoire, where he received his teaching and orchestral diploma in 1984 and his soloist diploma 1 year later. After graduating, Otto Sauter pursued further studies with Bo Nilsson in Sweden and Pierre Thibault in Paris. From 1988 to 1998, he was appointed principal trumpet of the Bremen State Philharmonic Orchestra. In this North German city, he devoted a lot of energy to furthering the careers of young artists. In 1994, Otto Sauter founded the Bremen Trumpet Academy, which under his guiding hand offered the most gifted trumpet players from all over the world a unique training program. Sauter also does a good deal of teaching at international colleges, like the Bremen Academy of the Arts, the Toho Glauken School of Music in Tokyo, and the Universidad Metropolitana de Santiago de Chile. Otto Sauter is one of the most sought-after soloists in the piccolo trumpet. In December 1995, he played with the Philharmonia Orchestra of London in the presence of His Royal Highness Prince Charles at St. James Palace. 1998 saw him give a guest performance at the Vatican as part of a concert to mark the foundation of the German Society for the Restoration of the Vatican Art Treasures. In August 2000, he played in St. Peter's Square for Pope John Paul II and 50,000 visitors together with the Philharmonia Hungarica during the Festa Musica Pro Mundo Vienna. Since spring 2001, he plays regularly with his own cycle of spiritual music, Elevazione Spirituale, at the Vatican. In April 2001, Otto Sauter played together with the China National Symphony Orchestra conducted by Muhai Tang in the Forbidden City in Beijing. The rest of his biography is a list of incredible accomplishments that he has, you know, succeeded in pursuing in his incredible career as specifically a piccolo trumpet player specializing in the Baroque repertoire. This was my first time meeting Otto Sauter, so I want to thank him for his generosity and his time. And I also want to thank Sven Lickengaard for, you know, helping me set up this talk with him. We talk about a lot of subjects in this conversation, but I wanted to point out a few that really stuck out to me. One that's very dear to me is how new generations have Spotify and Apple Music and yet seem to be listening less than ever before intently. So Otto and I talk about the process of having to go and buy your records, have to save up, have to spend time with them, and then having to spend, you know, a month really loving that record or getting to know it before going and buying a new one. We even come to the admission that both of us don't listen as much as we used to. We also talk about how students listen too critically to both their peers and their mentors, and they don't see the music. They're just listening for mistakes, which really is not a great way to absorb something you love. In an earlier episode of this podcast with the economist Tyler Cowen, we talked about how being a fan is the best way of making new fans. So it's kind of concerning that the people that are training to be musicians don't really seem to be fans, but seem to be listening as if it was a point system. I think there's a lot to learn from this conversation about exploring new repertoire, how to play Baroque music, and many other subjects, and I hope you enjoy it. So without further ado, I leave you with Otto Sauter.
Okay, so really nice to meet you. Thanks you for taking the time to do this. So just to tell you what I do. So the podcast is that I do is less about like trumpet technique always and more about artistic practice, stuff like that. So I will guide kind of questions in that direction. Tell me what you're most interested in these days. What has you preoccupied artistically and what projects are you doing these days?
Last month, I made a recording with new pieces with Big Symphony Orchestra and piccolo trumpet. I'm happy that we could do it. Finally, we could do it. And it's looking all the time for new music. I have, by the way, I have about 1,000 Baroque music pieces, yes. Concerts which are not recorded yet. Wobei is German, but they are, let's say, six. Some are anonymous and not so interesting, but 600 are good. And I just spoke with my wife. We will do at least 4 or 5 new recordings this year because time is running away and I'm not getting younger. This is.
But your output in that regard has been huge. I mean, the work you've done with Baroque music is very big. It's interesting that your career has happened parallel to like a decay in modern instrument Baroque music, and you've kind of kept going with that.
Yeah, I play only piccolo trumpet.
Yeah,
in my festival, by the way, Ed was there also. I never wanted to become a soloist.
What did you want? You were in an orchestra originally.
Yeah. When I was young and as a student, I wanted to become principal trumpet in major symphony orchestra. And but when I signed the contract, I had millions of butterflies in my life, like when you felt in love the first. But after 10, 12 months, no butterflies anymore.
In the orchestra?
Yeah.
What changed?
Not the music. And then I had a... because I studied first in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. There you could study without having finished high school, and then after I made all the diplomas. In this time you had to do the teaching, orchestra and solo diploma, and then I went to Paris. And before I was half a year in Sweden with Bo Nilsson. Bo Nilsson was the teacher of Håkan.
Yes.
And then I went to Thibaut, and after Thibaut I went, let's say five months to Tom Stevens.
Ah, you studied with Tom? Yeah. I didn't know.
But not officially. My idea was, in Germany, when you study, you have one hour class per week, same teacher for all. So we created a new idea of a academy, and so I spoke with that about this with my manager, the orchestra manager, and he said, Otto, you have to, which you should make a festival first so that the politicians and the industry people get they know about your idea, and then you, because so this was the reason why we started the festival in Bremen. The title was International Trumpet Days Bremen first. And in the first festival, I played a recital, two trumpet and organ, with Bo Nilsson. And 1 year later, 1993, I played with the Bach Collegium, Leipzig. I played the trumpet concerto from Riepel. And 1 year later, 1994, I played the Franz Xaver Richter concert and also one or two arias in the Cathedral in Bremen. We had 2,000 people in the audience. 400 trumpet students, but behind the in the orchestra, I played on the balcony behind the first violin. Maurice André, Pierre Thibault, Doc Schitzer, Clark Terry, Maynard Ferguson. I don't have to tell you.
That seems psychologically very healthy for you that day.
Yeah, I mean, it was. By the way, I have all concerts, uh-huh. all on video. So and after the concert, Maurice came there. Otto, this is your instrument. You have to play this. Doc Schitzer came. Oh, Otto, please show me how you play. I want to learn this. This. Oh, Timofey, you are 74 years old. What do you want? We never stop learning. When we stop learning, we are dead. He played in this concert, he played it, Neruda, I never forget this, he played the Neruda concert, mm-hmm. And the cadenza of the Neruda, his cadenza was longer than the whole Neruda. So anyway, I said to myself, okay, when you can play such a piece, like the Richter, in front of such an audience, I mean audience, then you can play everywhere. And then a record company offered me a contract. And I signed, and the same day where I when I signed the record, I resigned the orchestra.
This is a more common, obviously not your story specifically, but it's more common in Europe for there's not an attachment to stay in orchestral jobs forever.
Sure. I had a good salary. This was all
right.
Very good. No problem. But it was not my world. Yeah, and then I stopped. And all the colleagues and friends, are you crazy? How can you give up? I said to them, okay, look. First of all, I want to play the music I love, mm-hmm. and second, I want to play with whom I like to play. And this is, of course, no concerts, no money, no life. So, after I made 4 recordings with the first company, and then EMI offered me the contract of Maurice André. And EMI said, only piccolo, only baroque music, which is not recorded yet. So that's for, and I remember they offered me somebody wanted to offer me a concert with the Haydn concert for a really high fee. And I said no.
Why? Not interested?
No, because I decided to play only.
Yeah.
And one of my last concerts on big trumpet was Daniel Barenboim was conducting. Elena Bashkirova, she played piano. We played Shostakovich. Mm-hmm. I played not Tomasi, the other one.
Jolivet?
Yeah. And I played good. This is not.
But you just weren't interested.
No. I said, after the concert, I said, why are you doing this? There are people, other people like Håkan, like Reinhold, like who do this at least? Or. You understand?
Yes.
I asked myself. So. And this was good.
Like the interesting thing about you with the Baroque repertoire and the piccolo trumpet specifically is that you really have stayed true to finding new pieces and recording things that not everyone is recording. And that's amazing.
The friend of Ed Carroll helped me there a lot. John Wallace.
Yes, John, of course.
Because he opened the door to me with a collection of new music, new Baroque music. Which was really, fantastic. And so then EMI came, and then with EMI I made only, unfortunately, 6 recordings, because after EMI closed, they are finished. They had been finished then, not because of me. I hope. No. So this was the reason. Piccolo trumpet, of course, mostly baroque music, and now I. Recorded 3 CDs, 3 productions with new Baroque music and new compositions.
Were you ever tempted to, because that was also the era when the like rebirth of period instruments and all of that, were you ever tempted by that world? Or a better question would be, why weren't you tempted by that world? It seems like that was the fashion in Europe at the time.
I don't understand the question.
Yes, I'll rephrase. In that time that you were getting your start and the contract, Europe was becoming very fashionable to do the baroque, the period instruments, like a baroque trumpet.
I had many classes with Edouard Tarr, mm-hmm. with the baroque trumpet. I played also the baroque trumpet. But to be honest... as a solist on baroque trumpet, you have no chance.
Why?
There's no work.
Yes.
There's no work. And we had two great soloists. And I don't. So this was the reason why I stopped doing this. And
It's interesting though, because we also had the big soloist at the time. Maurice was the only one that had.
Who is this?
Maurice André.
Who is this? Yeah, you laugh now. It happens so often that the young
don't know Maurice.
They don't know this the name anymore.
That's also, sad.
Doc shit. No, I was with Sergei. We had been 2 times in. We spoke about Maurice André. Who is this? This is crazy.
Well, speaking of Maurice, because he brought the piccolo trumpet into fashion and all this, You seem to have been the only soloist that followed that generation that was able to move in the same direction. Why? Why do you think that that happened? You know, because everyone else, you know, you see Håkan. Håkan had to go a different direction to be a soloist.
But I'm, but it, you know, I sorry to say this. I think I as a soloist, you have to specialize on certain music, let's say. And Håkan is when it comes to real modern music. He's after Tom left us.
Yes,
he's number one. Mm-hmm. So and there's this is the good thing, you know. And I never could play this modern music like Tom or Håkan. So why should I do it?
So it was a choice of the repertoire you liked, really.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I loved Tom very much. Of course, he was a very private man. I'm not going to say we were friends.
Talk about Tom Stevens.
Yes.
Okay.
I knew Tom in the last few years of his life and had a correspondence with him and stuff. Mm. I'm always curious, what was it that attracted you to study with Tom? Was there a specific reason?
Yeah, because I had records of him. And Thibaut spoke he honored him also. So, yeah, this was the reason. I was some months I was here. And later he came to Bremen. He was teaching in our academy. He was special. But for me, I never heard a trumpet player playing real modern music like him. He was like a computer, absolute.
Is there something, a story you remember of Tom that comes to mind, or not really? Is it just the general persona?
No, I mean, I had two stories. He hated Baroque music, and he had to record the Brandenburg Concerto with Zubin, because Zubin for Deutsche Grammophon. And I had for 3-4 years I had my own radio, let's say radio talk show or classic radio German, and Friday evening. And in this once he was when he was in Bremen one week, I chose the Brandenburg. He was so mad on me.
That's okay.
I had to play this. He didn't say shit, but I had to play this because I. We made a tour, masterclass tour, let's say here in the States. It was Dallas or Atlanta. He was so meh. Oh, let's move. They are too stupid. Let's go. And then there came the mic. I said, "Tom, give me 5 minutes, half an hour. I have to teach another student." And there came the trumpet student. He was he came in like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, and then he said, "I asked, what do you want to? I'm going to play a trumpet sonata for piccolo trumpet." From Viviani, and then he said, "I'm pretty sure you don't know this. It's the only original composition for trumpet and organ. I'm pretty sure you don't know this." I said, "Look, maybe you know the name Columbus. When Columbus was sailing over from America, Europe to America, you had been still living on the trees." And we had already orchestras. And I said to Tom, "You're right. Let's go." He's there.
I love that.
Yeah. No, but we had. I loved him. He was, in a way, sometimes not easygoing. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to... And I never would be able to play the music as he did. So this is...
Yeah, he was a very special player, and it makes me, you know, you just mentioned that a lot of players don't know the name Maurice André, which surprises me, but even more people don't know Tom anymore.
No.
Or Jerry Schwartz, or that era of people.
Of course.
Yeah, funny how things change.
Yeah, the thing is, I spoke with the students all the time about this. When we had been students, we had to save all our money to buy new records. Yes. And now they can listen it for free. What are they listening? Only on the social media.
I have the same with my students when they're young. I remember, I don't know about you, but when I was young, you also had to get the records. Mm. But even after it was the iPod, and you would get the record, put it on your computer, and build a big library, and that was important. But I remember listening to so much music as a child.
Yeah.
When I was first playing the trumpet and finding the records of Maurice and the early records of Håkan and your records. And it was super important for my upbringing, especially because I was in Colombia, where we didn't have access to
Colombia, Missouri?
No, South America.
Okay.
You know, because that's where I'm from. But we didn't have access to
Bogota.
Bogota, yeah.
I was there 1 year ago.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I'm so glad. Yeah, there. You know, people like you come there now, but in the 90s, it was not. You know, it was unsafe. There was no infrastructure for concerts, and so recordings were everything. It's really surprising that people don't listen. As much, at least my students don't listen as much as I did.
This is the new generation somehow. It's hard. So, yeah, well, I don't know what to say. But to be honest, when do we have time? I'm talking about myself. Mm-hmm. Then do I have time to listen to music in the airplane or in the badewanne,
right? Restroom.
Yeah.
Restroom.
No, in the water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you think about.
Yeah. So it's all in the car.
Yeah.
But so I was shocked about myself.
But you listen less than you used to.
Yeah, sure. Than before.
What do you think the reason for that is? I by the way, I find the same thing.
I'm traveling all the time, so normally. 40, 45 weeks a year, I'm on tour.
Right.
So, yeah.
What do you listen to when you're on the plane or on the car or in the bath?
No. I listen a lot of recordings from Dirk Schitzer. As I said to the students yesterday, when Sergei is visiting me, we sit in our house in front of the television like little kids. And watch and listen videos of Dirk Schitzer.
That's great.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. I mean, and as I said, I have all concerts on video. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful. I mean, to see and listen to these great players. And there, if once Philip Smith was also there, and he played so fantastic. And I really, so with so much emotion, and he played in Napoli. He missed one note. He stopped. ladies and gentlemen, please forgive me this mistake and give me the possibility, a chance to make. Unbelievable.
That's pretty great.
But it was really fantastic. So, you know, this is what I mention all the time. What I'm doing, what I'm teaching, is the result out of. I played with all great players, except Wynton Marsalis. Everybody was there. We worked together. We spoke. We listened.
I remember thinking that when I met Tom and to some degree with Ed at Chosenville, a lot of what they talked about was that era where players were meeting each other. Almost for the first time in history at the degree, you know, because airplane travel and everything was easier than it had been in the 40s, 30s. Mm. And I think my generation definitely takes that for granted. I don't think we're it seems like Tom would, for example, would be just looking to go meet Bo Nielsen or Thibaut and you to meet them.
Yeah.
And I think that was an era that generated really interesting, very different players. So many people.
I told the story to the guys yesterday. I remember we had a concert with Clark Terry, and Timofey, he finished here. Everybody has his mask. I said, Timofey, I pick you up at 7:15 from the hotel to Otto. I'm 74. I'm old man. I was teaching the whole day. I pick you up 7:15. Otto. I took pick him up. He came, and then we should see him. He was sitting beside stage. And after, Otto, thank you so much. this was, and I have this on video. I can show you this. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Clark Terry at that time too. Ooh, you know, what a technique!
It was one. He was. I never forget. In this show, he was singing a rap on Werder Bremen. Werder Bremen is a very famous German soccer club in Bremen. Mm-hmm. So you could learn so much from this great musician, artist, Maynard.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Everybody was Tom. Ed was also, I think Ed was there in 92 or 93. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that would coincide when he was in Europe, living in Europe and everything.
So
yeah.
it for me, this was the best school because you learn so much. You watch, you listen, you ask.
And you don't see as much of that now, is what you are saying.
I must say, when I at the first festival in 91, in the opening concert, we played the Janáček Symfonietta, and before we had a soloist, and he played good, but not as good as he. So, and I saw when there was the kicks, I would look down to the audience, and I could see the students. For the first time, I realized So
there had been a change of attitude.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And there was a concert in Gran Canaria, the Trumpet Festival.
Yeah.
Marc Guijon was playing. He played an arrangement of Enesco with orchestra, and he played so beautiful. It was really wonderful. Next morning, I asked the first student who came to my class, I said, oh, you like the concert? Yeah, beside the three kicks, it was okay. I said, what? I even didn't realize that he made the kicks.
Right.
I mean, you know, you understand. This
yes. Dave Bilger told me a story about James Levine now.
Mm-hmm.
But he appears in one of James Levine's books because Levine was very taken with a post-horn solo that they did on tour. And he said Dave played it beautifully. And he got like a 3-page mention on this book. And he says he remembers when they did the live concerts.
Yeah.
One of his students was in the audience, and he came up after and said, "Like, well, it was almost good. Like, you made a couple mistakes." And David always said, "Well, you know, 3 pages from Levine, but my student thinks it's not, you know, not good enough." So yeah, something in the listening has changed. Tell me, you know, when you're recording the Baroque music. And a lot of it is new to us, you know, new for recording. Okay. How do you come to information about Baroque music? Certainly not just from trumpet playing, obviously. So what are your inspirations in Baroque music?
First of all, I must say, when I recorded new Baroque music in the first period, I record them, and later I play them live in concert. Then I listen to the recording again. Oh shit! I would have played this different. So no. Then I started to play first the pieces several times in concert, and then there was this one story in '93 when I played the Bach Collegium. We played Riepel, as I said, and Telemann. I came to Leipzig in the Gewandhaus. We had rehearsal, and after a few minutes, the conductor stopped. Mr. Sauter. Yes. Do you know Baroque music? I said, look, I have always got... No. Do you know Baroque music? I said, okay, if you play like this, we don't play with you. I said, Meister, I'm sorry. Okay, let's try from another side. Listen to the strings. And after they played it, and then, okay, I think I understood. So, well, and this is when I made the recording later also I recorded mostly with orchestras who had a lot of experience with Baroque music. You have to listen to how they phrase, how they... And of course, meanwhile, I got so much experience and knowledge about this. Yeah.
So you've learned a lot of... Because your record... I mean, so the interesting thing for me about a lot of your records is that they are very nuanced.
Well, what is...
Nuance is like... like sensitive to the Baroque style or something like that, like very detailed in that you could compare it to a professional that plays Scarlatti harpsichord. And a lot of trumpet records in the Baroque that aren't in Baroque trumpet are sort of very 20th and 21st century.
Yeah.
So what do you think makes the big... you said you learn by playing with the Baroque musicians, but what is it that makes... What are some of the characteristics that I guess the question. What is the characteristics that you see that most people make mistakes in the trumpet when they play Baroque music that you identify as like not in style?
Yeah, the thing, I think, first of all, the phrasing, the dynamic.
Very loud.
Yeah, it has to be light. When you play the Baroque trumpet light, loud, you kicks. Can you overblow and then you kicks? This is why they used, I don't know how many trumpets for the Royal Firework music when they had to play it in concert. They could, so it has, and I remember I played in the Brandenburg two times in Gran Canaria at the festival, and the second time the students complained that I played so soft. They couldn't hear me. But I said to them, hey guys, we are four soloists. It's not a trumpet solo concert, so it's,
Is it challenging to achieve that with such a powerful little instrument? Because the piccolo trumpet's very powerful.
But I play very often. I play also only with string quartet, and so you have to play really soft and light. This is, in December when we play the new pieces. 70 musicians playing. It's a little bit different.
Very strong. So you mentioned volume. How can somebody that is trying to approach Baroque music on the trumpet figure out the phrasing?
Yeah. For example, in more than 90% of the original manuscripts, you don't find articulation.
Right.
And you don't find dynamic. Even, by the way, also in the Haydn concerto. Right.
Yeah. There were texts.
So... they make a dynamic the articulation all the time how they want it. But when you, for example, when you have four 16ths, you can play four staccato. You can play two staccato, two legato, two legato, two staccato, three. But then you have to do it through the whole piece. Bum 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 pa dum bum bum pa dum bim. You hear very often bum bum pa dum pa dum bum bum. Bum, bum, ba, dum, ba, dum, bum. This is pity. A string player would never. They play light. Bum, 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 bum,
bim, dum, bum. You know what you're describing reminds me a lot of discussions I always had with Stevens, which in a similar light, he always said that we brass players weren't taught to think musically the same way that string players or pianists. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? What's the difference? Why are we so musically kind of silly?
You mean the trumpet players?
Players, yeah.
The trumpet players.
Because it's like you said, you meet violinists and a lot of them have just impeccable phrasing, almost part of their training. Why is that? What's the difference? Why do we not have that so much? I mean, you do, but why?
No. But I had to learn this too. Mm-hmm. As you remember, if you play like this, we don't play with you. And they got the fee from me for my festival.
Right.
You know how I felt in this moment? And I never forget. So I played with the orchestra in front of the church, and on the balcony, Doc Schitzer played with the organ, and I'd been only a transcription on B flat trumpet. The maestro said to me, "Paul, the style is really, but it's so beautiful." Everybody was right. He was, of course, Doc Schitzer was playing in a very romantic style.
Yeah.
fantastic. I loved it too, I must say.
It's very interesting to hear those recordings because it's like you say, the other one that's like this is the Thibaut.
I know.
It's like so strong and over the top, but it's like, yeah.
But when he played the Baroque music, he played this insane. Same, pretty the same style than Doczyca.
Right, right. Which is it's sort of a passé type of playing.
Yeah,
no?
But on the other hand, I must say when I play the Marcello Adagio, I try to play it in the same way than Thibaut played it. So this is not the Baroque style, but
yeah. But you like it.
I like it.
Yeah, but you don't do that really in your records. Your records are very.
No.
Very kind of correct Baroque playing.
Yeah, but yeah.
So there's obviously then a contradiction, in a way, because you play with impeccable kind of Baroque style, but on a modern instrument.
Yeah.
What is the advantage of that marriage? What do you find is so that works so well with that? Or what is the advantage to doing it on a modern instrument versus? A period instrument.
I mean, we have the knowledge about the historical way of playing Baroque music. So we have to only do the same with the piccolo trumpet. Very light, very soft.
The piccolo trumpet's also a hard instrument for a lot of people.
Yeah, but the problem, the reason that for is because most of them play the piccolo like they play the B flat trumpet. And they're very aggressive. You cannot play the piccolo trumpet really aggressive. So you have to play really...
It's a different instrument, though.
Yes, absolute.
Why did it work so well for you? Because you said that it was a Thibaut or Doczyca that came to you and said, that's your instrument. Or Maurice. Maurice said, that's your instrument. Why did it work so well for you?
I don't know what to say. I had to learn a lot, of course, in this time also. And I think that when I play, the audience, they can hear that the instrument, and I love this kind of music. If I would have to play music which I don't like,
yeah. What's your favorite composer right now, or who are your favorite composers that you go to, not just for playing yourself, but for listening for
Bach,
of course. Why? What about him?
Yeah, I mean Bach is my, how should I say? You know, I have a festival in Eisenach. Eisenach is the city where Bach was born, and on the Wartburg. And each time when I'm there, and we are now there, we do this fest for 20 years, I was 250, 300 times I was in the Bach Museum, in the Bach House. And each time when I'm there, I buy things. You can buy, anyway, everything, records, video, books, everything. Last year, I bought a movie, which was produced at the end of the DDR, the East German Republic, together with Hungary. Such a beautiful movie. And when I listen and watch this, I must say, they had to go by horse coach from one city, let's say one day or 2 days. They had no iPhone, they had no... But to meet this man who started on Monday to compose the cantata, write all the parts, we rehearsed the piece, and on Sunday was the premiere. And on Monday he started, such a genius. And his music is still now.
And we know that we've lost a lot of his work, so that's not even his full... It worked. The economist Tyler Cowen says that he thinks Bach was the most overachieving human in history, which I think is, you know.
Yeah, it happened several times. I said to my wife, I would give the rest of my life if I could meet this man only half an hour. She said, it's very sad, nice. But I would. It's not only talk. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. For people that, I mean, it's hard to imagine, but like we were saying, people don't listen as much as they used to. What would be, for you, the entry point, or what are the things that you think people should, if they're only going to listen to a certain amount of Bach, what are the things that you, if you're on a desert island, what are the works of Bach you take with
I mean,
you?
For me, one of the most compositions which I love is the B minor Mass.
Oh, yeah, that's a crazy work. It's so beautiful. But I share.
And when I'm in Eisenach, I'm all the time. Bach is around me. And by the way, once we had just before I made 6 or 7 recordings with the organ, 3 with organ for EMI, and we recorded in Leipzig in the St. Thomas Church in the night because day over was so much touristic. So they have a new Bach organ in, when you on the left side in front. So we had, when we record this, when we rehearsed it, I had my light on my music stand. The organist had a light on his music, nothing else. Mm. And I had all the time the feeling, and now I get again the, that the big maestro stand behind me and is watching me. Mm. Because, you know, he's sleeping there. He's in front of the church. Yeah. So, and I never forget this.
There were many prolific composers in the Baroque, but was Bach stands almost alone, right? I mean, he was his own sort of genius. Who else do you like from that period? That and why?
Oh, there is a German composer which I didn't know before, to be honest, Johann Samuel Endler. Mm. He was Kapellmeister in Darmstadt, a city beside Frankfurt. His music is similar to Bach, but no, of course not that. It's more easy when it comes to harmonies and all these kind of things. Not so, but for the trumpet, it's really
beautiful.
Beautiful Hammerhard. He really, and he wrote all the time sinfonias for 1, 2, 3 trumpets, and I never forget when I recorded the piece. It's for 2 flute, 5 timpani, and for the so I came to the recording, and the timpani player came 5 minutes before the. Then he opened up the music and was shocked. Why? Because they were in one movement. The solo instruments have been the 2 flutes and the 5 timpani. So the timpani player has to play melodies, a melody. So, of course, we could not record this in the beginning yet. We had to do it at the end of the... he needed time to practice it. So Endler writes beautiful music, very difficult for trumpet. And as I said, I didn't know them. And I didn't know him before. There's a lot of music more, so I'm going to record them. I have some fantastic arias from Caldara and Caldara. What is the other one? Caldara for counter tenor, and I premiere them in Berlin Phil, but I have not recorded them because I need a good counter tenor, and the trumpet part is really hammer hard. To be honest, I have copies from all the manuscripts. There is one. I don't know how they had been able to play this.
Oh, with the trumpets of the
time.
Yeah,
it's original written in. It's unbelievable. You can find it on YouTube. But maybe they made a glissando. I don't know how they could play this. But this, you have to go up to the high. B flat.
I mean, you're from that part of the world, and also a lot of your career is spent in the actual places where these things were played. What do you think made kind of the Lutheran Germanic states, all of that, so prolific with composition during the Baroque period? Why do we have such wealth of interesting music?
In the Baroque time, I didn't know this also before. They had a trumpet guild in Germany. I mean, a real trumpet guild. And they kept the knowledge how to play trumpet inside this guild. So nobody outside could learn from them. But the crazy thing is, in a society in Germany, he was the king and the next had been the trumpets. Normal people had not been allowed to even to talk with us. Once the Spanish king wanted, he was not so happy with his trumpet. He wanted to take a German trumpet player, but it was so expensive. He had to kick out 5 or 6 of his musicians. we found this in the. So it's not.
It's not a lie. So you think part of it was just that the expertise was kept alive in very strict.
Yes.
So. Really, it was hyper experts in that specific part of the world.
And also, there's one triple concerto from Fasch, mm-hmm, for oboe d'amore, violin, and the trumpet. this is really hammer hard to play. So you can imagine. I think it's A major or E major. So it's really, and mostly they wrote trumpet concerto when there was a good trumpet player. In this case, there was a good violin, a good oboe, and so.
Right.
Yeah. This.
What do you think happened? Because then the trumpet, it lost its spice and flavor between the classical era and really the 1920s. What happened to those guilds? And what I mean,
I cannot say what the reason that for is, but I must say that without Maurice André, the trumpet, we would have been not. Would have been no chance to find the trumpet as a solo instrument in normal concerts.
In the classical world.
Yeah, in the classical world. So that's for, and we cannot thank him enough what he did for us. But they play the Haydn, and that's once a year, once in 10 years, or Hummel once in, but otherwise. First is violin, piano, cello, and the trumpet is so pity. Huh?
I mean, Håkan always told me that that was the problem that Stephen saw and that he sought to help out with, which is, yeah, the trumpet was a very low on the podium, on the totem pole of soloists. And I mean, your side of things with Etar and the stuff you've done with Baroque music, and then parallel to that, what Stevens and Håkan and they did with contemporary music, has given the trumpet a chance. I feel like there's more repertoire available now than ever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, in our times, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
For so sure. If that's true, why? Are you frustrated at all that the students are not finding that repertoire? Because sometimes I go to recitals and it's still always the Haydn, the Hummel, and then the Baroque music they pick is either transcriptions or...
Yeah, but you must say, we have the transcriptions only. When Maurice came, there was not so much music published.
Of course.
So this was the only way he could go.
No, of course, but the question is not... It's totally, I mean, I agree with you. What Maurice did is incredible and opened the door. Also, because he was doing it with the big orchestras. It wasn't regional. It was, you know, Berlin Philharmonic and all the big orchestras, London. But I find that this, I don't know if it's the teachers or the students are, it's like, at least in America, it's like the phone hasn't rung and said like, hey, there's a bunch of repertoire now. Do you find the same in Germany or is that localized to North America?
It's, I think, pretty the same in other countries. Most important thing is that it's up to us. We have to tell them what. But the crazy thing is, the students, they don't buy music anymore. Mm-hmm. Oh, can you send me a copy? Can you? It's they don't listen to. Can you send me a? So, yeah.
That what you describe is also a big contrast from your entire career because. How? What is the process for you to find these pieces? Because there must be a lot of study, right?
I got this big collection from John Wallace.
Of course,
this is enough for two lives, even more.
But you still have to go through it. You could get a big
collection. Yeah, sure. I will go. I will go on now. So that's why we restarted. By the way, we start a new Baroque festival in Mexico in San Luis Potosí. In December, in 10 days, 5 concerts, only with new Baroque music. And we reproduce everything with cameras. So we make now the production also, not only for records, also for videos. Not videos, what you care for, DVD or...
Right.
Yeah. I stopped, as I said to you, this year I will... do a lot.
That's good.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit the process. So you get all these works from John Wallace.
Yeah.
How do you go through them to decide what is good or, I mean, because there's no recording.
Of course, I look first on the trumpet And when there's nothing in, or if it's when it's too too easy or not spectacular, let's say I don't. And then of course I play it first, and I love it, and then I will record it. I will play.
Are you finding other people? I know you're saying in general students don't seem that interested, but have you found people that are interested in helping you and continue that work?
Yeah, sure, of course. There, I have some really high talented students. By the way, one of the biggest talents I ever teach, Semyon Salomatnikov, is from Russia. Mm. I was teaching him since he was 11.
Wow.
He had two lessons per week online, and then we took him in our online academy, and last year he was winning the Tchaikovsky competition. Mm. 15 years old, the youngest first prize winner ever. So, and it's crazy, and this is he cannot transpose. So I was. How can I do it? So because we started to play first of all, he didn't like the, his mama didn't, they didn't like the piccolo because it's not popular in Russia. But anyway, this was one reason why he was winning the competition. I have to play him the piece. I play once through, and then he played this.
He can't unbelievable talent with the ears.
Unbelievable.
And everything.
Wow. So, I have. Two Mexicans, and one we just produced the first solo CD. The government, the state of Guadalajara, mm-hmm. they financed his solo recording.
Wow!
They paid the orchestra. This was in San Luis Potosí. I said, okay, I make the program. And I make it. So we said we do some piccolo pieces. So we had. Two really hard Franz Xaver Richter concert and Telemann, and then we had Haydn because he was also studying in Vienna, so Haydn B flat, and then we commissioned a new piece from a Mexican composer for symphony orchestra, and piccolo and B flat trumpet. He is very very good. So, and there is also another one. So anyway, they are, and I will give them also more and more. Music from my collection, and I just had a meeting with there came another student of mine, he played also the Brandenburg, no problem, so that they can play and record them. So, yeah,
I hope more people pick up the repertoire that you've uncovered and actually that are there inspired to do what you've done and go search for it, because also it's not so hard. You know, compared to, let's say you pick up something like the Zimmermann Trumpet Concerto, like you're never going to, as a student, you're never going to find 100 people and a Hammond organ and finance it yourself. But with Baroque music, if you do this, I mean, it's like you said, a lot of it can be done with a string quartet. The ensembles are much smaller and cheaper to put together. And it's a great outlet for a young musician.
Or with an organ.
Yeah, or an organ.
It's a... So I have this, I say to the students very often, play with an organ player, play many services in the church or whatever, so that people hear you playing. When you play good, they will memorize your, is the right word, memorize? No.
Remember.
Remember your name, and then when somebody's looking for a gig, for people, and it's working. And they also get routine to play.
So I guess we should wrap up, but what are your predictions for the music scene and the trumpet? What do you think is, what are you positive about and what are you negative about in the next decade for young trumpet players and young professionals?
I think if they should listen to the great musicians. Of course, the great trumpet colleagues, but also to other musicians, great violin player, because they mostly listen. They ask, and this is crazy. I realized this at the festival in Bremen. The jazz players, the jazz trumpet players, they are much more open when it comes to music than the classical players. Huh? So I work a lot together with John Faddis, and We had last year, it was last year or 2 years ago, in the Summer Academy, there was one singer, a soprano. She was the wife, she's the wife of the horn professor. And the question he was asking her about pieces, and to be honest, I didn't even know that. Boy, he knew so much about fantastic.
They also, jazz musicians, I mean, I remember when I was going to school, what the bad part, ironically, because I think that some of the jazz musicians from the 70s and 80s trumpet players had better technique than a lot of classical musicians. What I remember when I was going to school is some of the jazz musicians had less technique than the classical musicians, but they had infinitely more knowledge about the music they produced. They knew harmonic sequences, the patterns, they knew how their music was constructed, whereas you could go to the most talented trumpet player and some of them didn't know what a cadenza was, you know, resolutions or anything like that. And you're right, I find a lot of jazz musicians much more open-minded to other music than classical musicians.
Unbelievable.
Yes,
I realized this myself in the festival when I was in touch with the guys all the time. So what I can suggest to young people, when they listen to music, listen, for example, when it comes to modern music, choose the right artist. When they listen to romantic music, choose the right... It would happen. I had a student, he was from Spain. He should play Böhme or Arjuna. Have you listened to a record of this? Yeah. He mentioned the name from a Spanish. Never heard this. I said, you should listen to Sergei Nakayakov or Timo Fedor. Oh, I don't like. He said, what? I mean, you know, they have to listen to, when it comes to romantic music, we have the two heroes, Doc Schützer.
Right.
And then when it comes to French literature, we have also there. So they should listen to the right people.
I think, you know, you'll get I won't say who it was, but I saw
probably,
somebody.
I will know it.
Yeah, well, I was with somebody in a big American orchestra once that we were listening to somebody do like a mock audition.
Yeah.
And they said something to this person that I almost left the room because they said, go home, find a good recording of this Beethoven symphony. Not some crazy European orchestra, like Cleveland Orchestra 2020 something. And I was like, you realize this is their music. The Berlin Phil plays Beethoven better than any orchestra. That you know, like the idea that some people had built their minds with what music was supposed to sound like with a very narrow pathway. And it kind of, with this specific player, it shows, because when I hear this person, it's not beautiful. It's just, you know, it's interesting.
I remember I was, once I played a concert with the Radio Symphony Orchestra in Frankfurt, and they played, I think it was also Beethoven Symphony, and they all played with, it was Beethoven 7, right? Yeah. And they played with Baroque trumpet and Baroque, and I was a little bit, but to be honest, this was perfect.
It sounds so good.
Suddenly you don't hear that, the trumpet, the high, it's much more it's from the sound is really wonderful.
It's also what you described, that on the Baroque trumpets or the period instruments, you can't really go all the way. Yeah. And so when you play loud, it has all the color, but none of the huge volume of a modern instrument. And I think, let me ask you for then to finish off some suggestions of things that you are like to listen to. It doesn't need to be trumpet players. So what performers do you like listening to, and what pieces or what works, you know? It doesn't have to be a lot. It can just be like three or two suggestions of things that you think every musician should hear.
I would say composition of Bach, because Bach is modern all the time.
Mm-hmm. And who are your favorite performers of Bach? Not just for trumpet, just in general.
Yeah. I have some old recordings which are not, how should I say, when it comes to the style.
Not correct.
Yeah, not. But anyway, another thing which I have to tell you. When I was here, I had the chance and possibility to meet Ernest Fleischmann.
Oh, yeah. The legendary executive director of the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Tom brought us together. And he said to me, Otto, the classical music world must change. The time, ouverture, solo concert, intermission, symphony, this time is over. If we don't change something now, we will have no audience anymore. And this is the situation where we are now.
Yeah, because Ernest was saying this in what, the 90s, 80s, 70s?
So we have to combine, he said, we have to combine with jazz, rock, new world. I don't know, but we have to do something. I have this all the time in my mind. And just before you came, I had a phone call. There's a very successful hip-hop artist, he was here. And so we are going to recording some pieces, baroque music together with...
That's great.
So I don't know if... But Ernest Fleischmann is all the time in my bag, and we will see if it's... I'm pretty sure it could be good, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's another forgotten name for a lot of people, but Ernest Fleischmann had a brilliant mind. I mean, that man really... Yeah.
It was a concert in Hollywood Bowl. They played Stravinsky, Oedipus Rex. Maximilian Schell, the actor, was reading it. And after we had a dinner together, Zubin was conducting. And at the dinner, Tom, he didn't speak one word. Nothing. The following week... Nothing. He even didn't speak with his wife, with his co- nothing. Then I asked him, what happened? Yeah, I had the cakes. So he was so... He only went in his room practicing like...
Because he made a few mistakes. That's funny.
No, unbelievable. But anyway, Ernest Fleischmann is still here, and he's right. I had the Gewandhaus director, Gewandhaus, you know. We are close friends also. They had been on tour in Japan, and there it changed also a lot. The our business. They had only 5 concerts, and 2 had been cancelled just before, so they had only 3. The old people don't come anymore because of the, and the young are not interested, the younger generations. And this is what we have also in Germany, we have this everywhere, so we must do something.
Yeah, I think, I you know, like I told you, I do fundraising, that's the other part of my life. We did something very wrong because we have a generational gap in the supporters. I see young people are interested in classical music. They also see it actually as an experience. I see young people coming to the symphony on a date. You know, they're not big music lovers, but they see it as a thing to do. But the generation born late 70s, you know, the ones that are really rich right now, the tech billionaires, all that, we did a terrible job at attracting them to the orchestra. And you're right. I think everyone says something has to change, but very few places are actually doing anything to do the change. It's very complicated.
But we have to do something.
It's otherwise, existential. Yeah.
Otherwise,
game over.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, it's for example, in Japan, they the guy who is organizing the festival, the concert, he has to pay the concert hall. No tickets. Finish.
Yes.
So it's the old people, before it was like this, the old people, they have time, they had the money, and they liked him, especially then, you know, the corona and all this kind of thing.
It changed a lot of people's.
And the war, you don't realize this so much here, but in Europe, it's really everything it's getting more and more expensive. And
Well, there's a thing that performing arts suffer from in that economists have been studying since about the 80s. It's called the Baumol disease. And what it shows is exactly what you're saying, which is the performing arts don't get more productive. It still takes as long to get good at the trumpet as it always did. But the cost of everything keeps going up. And we haven't found a way to keep up with the cost of everything. So, yeah. Like you said, the concert halls are more expensive than they were in the 80s. Yeah. The musicians are more expensive, but we're not generating bigger revenue.
I must say, it changed already a lot, because when I was a student before and a little bit later, they still paid crazy fees.
Yes.
But this time is over.
Yes.
This game is over.
Also, because the record industry is not what it was. I'm sure you've lived that as well.
Finish.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, people are still recording, but there's no big money to be made, right?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, to make a record is only to have a business card.
Like a business card you can hand, yeah.
I mean, what we sell good recordings after a live concert.
Sure.
Yes, but otherwise...
Right, but it's not like it used to be where they just were at the store and people would buy them and big contracts.
But again, I was asking myself, when was I the last time in a shop to buy new CDs?
Right. So it's not everyone, it's us too, right?
Before I was at least once a week, I mean, when I was studying in Paris.
Yes. I can actually remember the last time I went to a record store. I go to record stores like used albums here in LA. But the last time that old, like the new, buying new albums at the place was when I visited Berlin, and that was in 2011. So it's a long time.
Also, the big orchestra, they don't sell.
No. Nobody's doing it.
Yeah.
Even the pop artists aren't really making money off sales of records. It's more the tour that comes with the record.
So it's we all have to look and have to find new ways and... Yeah.
Are you pessimistic or optimistic about that?
I'm all the time positive.
Good.
I can show you one second.
Explain this.
This is my year.
Ah, so this is your touring calendar and you have like the flags of the countries where you're going to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We are here somewhere. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I'm...
You're active.
Yeah,
good.
Even during the pandemic, we have so many things. And I must say, when we had, I founded the Trumpet Academy in Bremen, mm-hmm. when Tom was there, and we stopped everything. It was in 2000 because my father friend, the president of the soccer club, he died, he passed away. Mm-hmm. And this was a guarantee for the
funding.
Yeah. During the pandemic, I was used to teach a lot of online because I'm specialized on amateur problems. So when people have students have problems, I change the amateur. So I work with them and so we had a friend, my wife and I. He was the biggest private steel trader in Europe. And him and his wife, they had been working there the whole life. They never made enough. And end of the 80s, he sold the company for $700-800 million. Wow. And then they went, they decided to go on a cruise. And first on the cruise boat number one, I mean, when it comes to... first of all, they had been there some weeks, and at the end they had stayed there 7 years. But they had they love music. So on this boat, they organized once a year a classical festival, but not on the boat, but outside. So when I was there once a year, I was with the orchestra there, and we played. So I met them. This man gave us... for our summer academy, with these 4 weeks master classes, which we organize ourselves with the Broke Bus Association. He gave us 25,000 Anyway, I said to the student, please make me a video and play something and say thank you to Mr. Schroeder. And he was so overwhelmed when I said, I would like to do more for these young people. What can I do? I said, well, I have an idea. Yeah, I would like I would like to open up an online academy, trumpet academy. And that, yeah, but would it be possible that this academy has the name of our foundation? No problem. So now we got the money. Yeah. We got the money. We do this now since 2 years. So we have, we can give a stipendia for 10, 12 students. And the students have six lessons per week. Anyway, with the best teacher. Yeah. Anyway, this was wonderful. And before, and of course, because of the pandemic, everybody had to teach online. Before, what? Online is such a shit, but we had to do it.
Well, and things got better because people went and bought microphones. The technology got better. I mean, Zoom is so
yeah. So great. It's
amazing.
It's so. And this is what I said. It's you have to be only all the time on.
Always forward.
Yeah, I love it, and it's of course sometimes. You got also negative, makes a but on the why? It's this is life.
Huh? Well, we're very lucky to have you. And where can people find your academy and if they have interest in applying and everything?
Yeah, they should only World Brass Association. They should look. We had the World Brass Association. Yeah, it's another little thing. When I stopped the festival in Bremen 2000, I made. Over 10 years, I made everything. And this was the biggest brass festival in the world, by the way. Biggest because the opening concert, for example, 94 in a football stadium, costed $1.5 million. So this, anyway, so I made everything I could do. So I was also tired after.
Of course.
But... My father's friend, he passed away. So, and then I stopped. And then, but I watched the scene. There had been so many things everywhere. And after a longer time, I said to my wife, "I think I would like to start something again." Because for me, the most important point is the other students, the progress, and the everything. So, and then we. The European Union is supporting up to six. So we founded the European Brass Association, and after we did this, we got many other countries contacted us. Now we have 76 countries.
Wow!
So this is the world. Then we changed the name to the World Brass Association, and it's yeah.
Well, congratulations!
So the students yeah. they should only go on the VBR World Brass Association page.
Fantastic!
And, yeah,
Otto, thank you for this. This was amazing. I'm very happy to meet you. Thanks for everything you've done. This was great, and thanks for the stories of Stevens. That's always a favorite of mine. And yeah, hope we talk again soon. Thanks for everything.
I come back in October.
Let's talk. Yeah. I'll take you out for dinner.
Okay.